From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 156 of Little Brother for the 29th of December, 2024. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Three U.S. senators, Elizabeth Warren, a Democrat of Massachusetts, Josh Hawley, a Republican of Missouri, and Jeff Merkley, Democrat of Oregon, have sent an open letter to automakers to raise issues with them about how business is being done. The letter concerns privacy concerns of car owners, but also discusses the right to repair what you own, both of these being topics I've covered many times before. I'm glad that they have composed this sternly worded letter. When do we move on to actually taking action? Back in 2019, Meta, the parent company of WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, and others, sued the Israeli cybersecurity firm NSO Group. Did I even need to say that name? I've talked about them quite a bit. Anyway, Meta sued them over spyware hacks that they created that targeted over 1,400 WhatsApp devices. This month, NSO were found liable for that activity. Federal Judge Phyllis Hamilton of the Northern District of California found that NSO Group's software and activities violated the Federal Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, or CFAA, and California's Comprehensive Computer Data Access and Fraud Act, or CDAFA. Arguments to determine the damages will begin in March. Unless you have been living under a rock, you should be aware of the assassination of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson a few weeks back. I didn't give it any airtime here because it's really off topic, but it has just become on topic. The current suspect in the assassination, Luigi Mangione, has become something of a folk hero to many folks. Now that's off topic too, but I told you that so that I could tell you this. Either UnitedHealthcare or somebody claiming to act on their behalf has been going around on the internet and claiming copyright on Mangione's image in order to force the images to be taken down by social media and other websites under the provisions of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. This use of the law is bizarre, it's grossly inappropriate, and quite possibly illegal under that very same law, but I guess none of this should be surprising. The assassination has cast a very bright light on UnitedHealthcare's practices, and they are understandably doing damage control. I imagine, though, that this is going to have the opposite of the desired effect. If you don't believe me, look up the Streisand effect on Wikipedia. I'll include a link to it in the program notes. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. It has already been mentioned in the past couple of episodes that the federal government has sounded the alarm about Chinese threat actors making their way deep into the internals of our telephone system. That shouldn't be news at this point. Currently, the Department of Homeland Security is suggesting that not only China, but also Russia, Iran, and Israel have gotten their fingers into the system. In addition to that, there's concerns in some circles about how the incoming administration will use the surveillance capabilities of the federal government, and these are capabilities that should have already been a cause for concern, regardless of who's in the White House, but they're taken into consideration by people in conjunction with how we believe that the people in charge at a given point in time are going to use them. To that end, I am making a couple of resources available in the program notes without further commentary or prejudice, and I may talk about some of the topics that they discuss at later dates. The first resource is published by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and it is titled Top 10 EFF Digital Security Resources for People Concerned About the Incoming Trump Administration. Now, despite the title, I would encourage you to review the tips in there, even if you are a Trump supporter. The second resource is from the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, which, as I've mentioned before, is part of the Department of Homeland Security. It is a PDF that you can download called the Mobile Communications Best Practices Guide. The URL to these resources are long, so I'm not going to read them to you, but as I said, I'll make them available to you in the program notes. You're going to find a bunch of things in the program notes this particular fortnight. I will make one comment here, though, actually. One of the pieces of advice from CISA is not to use a VPN. That has understandably been met with quite a bit of skepticism, but on that front, I would also like to recommend listening to episode 53 of this podcast from September of 2021, where I spend most of the episode talking about VPNs and what they can and cannot do. And yes, I will include a link to that in the program notes as well. It astonishes me at times how little situational awareness people have on the whole. We are going to be facing an uphill battle with this one. Let me tell you a quick story. In my area, there is a major installation of a significant corporate entity. You all already know that I'm located in Schenectady from the lead-in of the show, so I will leave them nameless. But I will mention that they have, at this time, at least a half dozen different campuses in the immediate four-county region, with four more under construction, and they are a major employer here. They are also probably not the first company that came to mind. About 2 weeks ago, a post appeared on Reddit criticizing the pay raises this year. Now, I'm not here to discuss whether or not the criticism was valid. That is not at all the point. What I will say is that the poster had the good sense to post from a throwaway account. When I became aware of the post, the account was only 3 days old. That was a very sensible thing to do. That demonstrated good situational awareness, and while I'm disinclined to tell people to hold their tongue, I'm glad to see that this person took steps to cover their tracks. Reading down the thread a bit, however, poster after poster after poster responded without giving it enough thought. One of these posters that particularly caught my attention posted a screenshot from a company document in their comment. Out of morbid curiosity, I clicked that person's profile. From the profile, I was able to learn that the commenter who posted that portion of the company document was an employee of this company. There's a shock. It was kind of a given. that the vehicle that they drive is something fairly distinctive, what department they work in, what town they currently live in, and what town they grew up in. Now, looking at this information, I'm about 99% certain there is enough info there to make a positive ID of who that poster was. I do not personally care, but I would bet there's someone out there who does. The company in question certainly has enough additional information to combine with this to get there if someone in the management felt vindictive or malicious. This raises another question. On that Reddit thread, there were dozens of other posters as well. I can't help but wonder if any of them were also careless with their OPSEC as they heaped their criticism on their employer. Now, I'm not one to tell people that they should watch what they say. That's none of my business. The reason I tell this story, the thing I want to make clear about this poster, is that this is careless and could get you hurt. I talk about operational security on this podcast because I don't want people to get hurt. And when you overshare on social media, you put yourself at risk of being hurt. The message you take away should not be to keep silent. Far from it, in fact. What I am suggesting, however, is that you should show some care in what you share with the world and what you allow what you share to become attached to, lest it come back to bite you in the ass. If you have a message, by all means, share it. But show some due degree of caution. Cover your tracks. It's far too easy to get overly comfortable and get yourself hurt. And the world is getting increasingly hostile towards critics. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. The city of Albany, New York, about 10 miles to my east, uses, as many communities do, a service called C-Click-Fix. You can kind of think of C-Click-Fix as an issue ticket system for communities. People who find themselves in a given community can use it to report things like potholes, broken or stolen street signs, uncollected garbage, malfunctioning traffic lights, broken glass in a bus stop shelter, whatever. In theory, the app then reports these things to the municipality's maintenance folks, and it, in theory, gets fixed. It's a great idea, in theory. It makes it very convenient for people to report problems, along with information about where the problem is, and to send pictures showing the problem. So what happened in Albany, however, is a demonstration of what can go wrong. A lawsuit filed against the city 5 years ago is now causing issues with it. In the lawsuit, a motorcyclist named Henry Calabrese was driving down Lark Street when he hit a pothole and was thrown from his bike. Calabrese sued the city of Albany, and in the process, it surfaced that the pothole had been reported to the city using C-Click-Fix. Calabrese's lawyers told the court that this should count as the city having been notified in writing of the road conditions, and the city's position was that it didn't count. Well, it's gone through a few different courts, and it's currently in front of the New York State Court of Appeals. Now, just as a quick side note about New York State, the Court of Appeals is the highest state court. People not from New York don't generally know this. It's certainly not expected, I guess. And I'd guess that many people from within New York don't know it either. The State Court of Appeals, in New York State anyway, outranks the State Supreme Court. Just a little bit of an oddity about my wonderful state here. Anyway, it went that far as to be argued before the highest court in the state, and that court found that reporting an issue on C-Click Fix counts as notifying the city in writing of an issue. So, what's the fail? It's the city's response. They shut down the service immediately. A statement from the office of Mayor Kathy Sheehan advises people instead to call the city's hotline number, conveniently eliminating any possibility that the communication can be considered notifying the city in writing. While the city of Albany is working to figure out a way to bring back C-Click Fix, one simple thing that I cannot get away from is this. If the city would fix the fucking potholes, there wouldn't be a problem here. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Knight Rider 007, Frog's Butts, Julie Bernstein, Free Scholar, Azriel, Thriller at Play, and Joe Cadillac for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, or just want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 157 will drop on January 15th. Stay safe and have a happy new year.